Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Today is October 25th, 2017. The markets were slightly down today. As I heard driving in, they said stocks tumbled. Well, I think the Dow dropped 0.48%. And let's keep it in perspective, folks. I don't consider that tumbling. The Dow closed at 23,329, the NASDAQ at 6,563, and the S&P at 2,557. Our topic tonight discusses four hot topics in domestic law, or maybe topics we haven't talked about before. So that's what we're going to do. We are live. We'll take your questions. Lori C is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic. I'll do my best to answer them. The number is, jot it down, 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So tonight we are talking about these four topics, and I have a guest with me this evening. I have attorney Alan Tuller of Gross McGinley with 33 attorneys. Gross McGinley offers a powerhouse of legal experience to individuals and businesses in the greater Lehigh Valley region and beyond. Legal services include, but are not limited to, banking, business, employment, internet, real estate law, wills, trust, and estates, as well as matrimonial and family law. Alan serves as chair of Gross McGinley's Matrimonial and Family Law Group. In addition, he serves as a mediator, helping families face difficult circumstances while easing the burden of legal expenditures and added duress. His experience representing Lehigh Valley families in the family court system allows Alan to help navigate through stressful proceedings. Welcome to the show, Alan.
Hi, Lori. Thanks for having me back again.
Yeah, welcome back. That's right. And folks, Alan was on previously with his colleague, attorney Connie Nelson, and she was going to join us this evening, but was unable to. But they were on the show, I think it was last November of 2016. So if you're interested in hearing what we talked about then, which was on divorce, you can just go to WDIY.org, go to local programming, look for Your Financial Choices. And when you scroll to that, you will see all the podcasts that we've had from prior shows. So again, welcome to the show, Alan. Do you want to tell folks a little bit about yourself, more than what I might have shared?
Well, no, but thank you for your intro. I am the chair of the matrimonial section at Gross McGinley, and I've been there in that capacity since I rejoined the firm after serving as Lehigh County Family Court Master or Hearing Officer for nearly 4 years. And back again to talk about divorce and family law. The last time I was on, I think we were a little bit more divorce and finance oriented than I may be this evening, but I think with respect to any of the topics I discussed tonight, the important thing to remember is that when it comes to family law, costs and expenses can escalate quickly. And so to perhaps understand is to perhaps be able to anticipate, and to anticipate is to hopefully avoid unnecessary expenditure of costs and expenses. And with respect to each of the four topics we're going to talk tonight, all have the potential for running up costs for any of our listeners if they are experiencing or are going to experience any kind of family law conflict.
And Alan, you served as a master in Lehigh County, and can you tell people what that meant as far as you gaining that perspective?
Well, in Lehigh County in particular, although it's true of probably most counties in Pennsylvania, the courts have established procedures for the addressing and hopefully resolution of various family law disputes. So in Lehigh County, for example, child support, spousal support, and custody disputes are typically initially addressed by court-appointed attorneys, hearing officers, who, depending on the circumstances and the nature of this dispute, have authority up to a certain point to address and perhaps even decide various disagreements. So, for example, in the area of custody, hearing officers will initially conference a custody dispute, and then depending on the nature of the disagreement, you know, whether it involves challenges to primary or shared or partial physical custody, hearing officer may have the authority to hold a hearing and make a recommended decision. Or if they don't have authority in the area of a dispute over shared legal custody, primary physical custody, or shared physical custody, they'll conference the matter and then prepare the matter to be transferred to a judge for ultimate determination. And in the area of support, a support hearing officer is the second level, if you will, after the initial support conference, where they will preside over an evidentiary hearing, take evidence, and issue a recommended order with respect to establishment of a child support, spousal support, or APL obligation. So I did that for nearly 4 years in Lehigh County. I was the first support hearing officer in Lehigh County when Lehigh County moved from a two-tier system to a three-tier system. And that gave me the, if you will, necessary endurance, if you want to go back into private practice and try it out for real, because it's one thing to sit there as a hearing officer and look at attorneys come before you and say, boy, I could do it better. When you're actually out there and you have to do it for real, when you're in the arena, you get a whole new respect for what lawyers do every single day.
Right. So at the master level, you're hoping to resolve issues and save cost if it ends up going in front of a judge. But can attorneys help families resolve these issues even before you would have to go to a master?
Well, they can, but I mean, to be fair to the lawyers of you know, a group of, you know, which I am one, it is difficult when you are in the forum, litigation forum, where, you know, adversity is the default. You know, we're advocates at that point. And so, you know, when clients are coming to us to retain us in the context of potential litigation, yeah, I think we have a duty to give a client, you know, good and sound advice regarding the range of outcomes. And I think we owe it to our clients to explain to them just how expensive litigation can be, how time consuming it can be. But we're not there to mediate cases. We're not there to act as, you know, hearing officers or judges and to say to clients, you know, really, you know, what you're asking for isn't fair. That's not our job. Our job is to advocate within, you know, our sort of rules of professional responsibility and ethics to achieve the best outcome we can for a client. We lawyers can serve in an alternative context. We can be mediators. I'm trained as a mediator. A number of my colleagues in the Lehigh Valley are also trained as mediators. It's a completely different approach to achieving, you know, a resolution in, you know, the example we're talking about tonight, family law litigation. In that context, a mediator is not acting as a lawyer. He or she is not an advocate. What we are doing is hopefully facilitating, you know, the input of two people, parties to the divorce, and allowing them to bring to the table what their concerns are, because what one person may think they want in terms of an outcome may differ greatly from what the other person thinks they want. So the first goal is to identify what their perceived conflicts are. What are the issues? What is it you think you need to resolve versus what it is you want to resolve? And then to allow them to begin to articulate in a way that hopefully the other person can then hear and respond to how they see the outcomes. And it's a very different process than being a litigator. It's a process of listening.
Very good. And I like to hear that differentiation. Folks, we're coming up on our first break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. I have in the studio with me this evening attorney Alan Tuller of Gross McGinley, and we're talking about some, you know, interesting recent topics in family law, domestic law, maybe things we haven't heard about, what's new that maybe we aren't aware of. And Alan, we kind of went into a little bit about mediation versus litigation, and I want to talk about that a little bit more, but I thought, why don't we, and you set up a great framework for the show, because there were a few things we thought we would cover, which would be Act 102. So I'm going to want to know what Act 102 is. I want to go more into the mediation versus litigation and look at maybe the pros and cons of that. Pet custody, you had mentioned that, and I thought that's something that a lot of people probably don't think about, and I think that was very interesting.
They think about it lots.
Well, the people who have the pets think about it, but maybe the financial advisors or maybe some attorneys don't think about the pets or don't have that on their question list. I don't know. We'll have to have you check your list when you get back to the office. And also relocation and child custody, because, you know, we hear those stories where someone has custody and they want to move out of the area. So these are kind of the framework for the topics. But folks, if you have questions, you're welcome to give us a call. We're live. You can ask questions on air. Or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can talk, give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and she'll bring in the question to us and we'll do our best to answer it. And the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. So, Alan, first, let's talk about what is Act 102.
All right. So, Pennsylvania is a no-fault divorce jurisdiction, and effective 1980, with the passage of that law, it was and is now possible to obtain a no-fault divorce in Pennsylvania under one of two avenues, if you will. The first one is the easiest. It's what we call the mutual consent no-fault divorce. And someone files a divorce complaint, they file the divorce complaint, they serve it, and then both parties are in agreement. They've resolved their economic issues, if there are any. And Pennsylvania law says that, okay, 90 days from the date of the service of that divorce complaint, both parties agreeing to the divorce, you can file your consent papers and wrap it up, and you'll get a divorce decree. You have that 90-day cooling off period. Fair enough. So what happens if one person doesn't agree to the divorce? Well, it used to be the case that the non-consenting spouse could essentially hold the process up for a period of 2 years, measured from the date of separation. What's date of separation? Well, It's the date that the parties stop living together as husband and wife. And what's that? Well, that's a whole complicated mess. You know, someone moves out of the house, easy, simple, one and done. If you haven't moved out, you know, are you separate bedrooms, two ships passing the night kind of thing? You know, he said, she said, or he said, he said, or she said fights. It can get messy. So Pennsylvania law was modified more recently to provide that the service of the divorce complaint acts as your presumptive date of separation. But you could be stuck in this holding pattern for 2 years, measured from that date, whenever it was. And a lot of uncertainty happens in those 2 years, you know.
Can I ask a question? You said it's the presumptive date, but what if they say they were separated a year before or 2 years before? Do they go by that date, or is it now always the separation date is the service date?
You can argue for an earlier date. You can argue for a later date. You could make the point that I got served a divorce complaint, but we continued to live together as husband and wife after the service of that divorce complaint. If there's a disagreement as to the date of separation, the court, generally the divorce master, will have to take evidence and make a determination as to date of separation. But the service date of the divorce complaint is the presumptive date of separation. Okay. What does presumptive mean? It means that unless the other person who's contesting it can prove that it's not the date of separation, that filing service date will stand.
Okay.
So Act 102 is significant because the Pennsylvania legislature, in its infinite wisdom, finally decided that maybe 2 years was a little too paternalistic, and they shortened it to 1 year. So that means that if I'm getting divorced and I file my divorce complaint after December 31, 2016, which is the effective date, that if my spouse does not consent to the divorce, he or she can only hold the process up for a period of 1 year measured from that date of separation. As of that 1 year expiration period, I now have the ability to move the divorce forward. I can file for the appointment of the master in divorce. The court can take jurisdiction over the economic aspects of my divorce, can make decisions regarding equitable distribution and alimony. And I think the practical effect of this for your audience is that it lets people realize that the end is coming sooner than they would have otherwise thought that it might. It imposes a reality check. You're going to get divorced. Maybe now is a good time to consult with your accountant or your financial planner to start making arrangements for what life after divorce is going to look like. It's not going to be 2 years out in the future. It's going to be a year, and a year goes by very quickly, as everyone knows. You know, we've got Christmas carols playing in October already, you know, it goes. So, you know, and with respect to what I was talking about at the start of the show regarding mediation versus litigation, I think that it could actually help prompt and encourage, if you will, people to mediate rather than litigate. You know, once you get your arms around the concept that the marriage is over and that there's not a whole lot you can do to stop it, you know, maybe at that point you start thinking about the best and most cost-effective way to wrap things up. I need to deal with property. I need to deal with support. I need to figure out custody. And maybe it's certainly cheaper, and maybe it will be much less painful to go through mediation than to litigate all of this.
So would the couple together pick the mediator? So you said you were trained in mediation. Have you seen where you have a husband and wife who come to you and say, will you mediate?
It has to be done that way. It can't be done any other way.
Okay.
That's what makes it so different than litigation. Yes, in litigation, you know, spouse A picks me. You're my lawyer. Go get him, Alan.
Right.
And don't be nice about it. You know, in mediation, husband and wife, husband and husband, wife and wife, spouse and spouse, they have to agree. This is the mediator. Mediator doesn't have a pony in the race. They're not advocating for any. They're there to listen, ideally, not talk, listen, and then feedback to the parties. Are you hearing what your spouse is saying? And, you know, this is where your spouse is. This is where you are. You know, can you get someplace else so that we can resolve that? and then move on.
I'm going to have a follow-up question when we come back from our break. The phone number, folks, 610-758-8810. I'm talking to Alan Tuller from Gross McGinley. We'll be back in just a minute.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Thank you, and welcome back to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and I have in the studio with me this evening attorney Alan Tuller from Gross McGinley. Alan is the chair of their matrimonial and family law group, and he's been trained as a mediator, helping families face difficult circumstances while easing the burden of legal expenditures and added duress. I thought I would add that we're really getting into the weeds here tonight, and I tend to love getting into the weeds and understanding all of this. So I have follow-up questions for Alan and what we just talked about when we're talking about mediation versus litigation. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio. So it's interesting because a number of the topics we wanted to talk about tonight, I think, Alan, kind of are melding together. Act 101, you mentioned, was the change in the separation period being reduced from 2 years to 1 year, and how that is going to go fairly quickly for people. So there might be some incentive for them to resolve their differences a little bit faster, a little bit better, that they still could litigate, but it might prompt them more into mediation, which you were just talking about. Now, my question is, if you're serving as a mediator for a couple, and you see that one maybe says, you know, honey, you take, you know, all of the retirement accounts, you're going to be better off. And my little footnote is retirement accounts are all income taxable. And I'll take the real estate. Don't you worry. You have all the investments. As a mediator, is that your job to kind of say, hey, wait, are you guys considering whether the tax consequences, or are you literally just sitting there saying, do you understand each other, you know, and coming together with numbers? How do you?
It's a great question, and it's the question. I know mediators who insist that the parties have their own independent counsel. You're certainly permitted to. I agree with that approach. I think it's a very good idea, if for no other reason, to have an independent set of eyes trained in the law review the agreement that you've negotiated in mediation and try and catch exactly those problems. Is one spouse getting saddled with tax-heavy, you know, consequence assets as opposed to, you know, the other spouse who's taking all of the real estate and liquidity, and someone else is, you know, taking the, you know, retirement benefits that they can't touch, or, you know, the low-cost basis stocks, you know, that they're going to get nailed with, you know, down the road when they cash them out.
You know. So, excuse me, just because you have a mediator then doesn't mean you can't still get outside counsel. Alan, I know you were going to add something there, but we do have a caller on line one. We have Linda from Allentown. Linda, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, how can we help you?
I'm wondering if you can tell me how to deal with the situation where my husband has hired a lawyer well known in the Lehigh Valley to be very contentious and to keep the case going as long as possible for her own financial gain. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, I'd like to settle, but I can't settle because I don't know what the assets are. Many of the assets are hidden. And it's costing just tens of thousands of dollars because, well, my husband's lawyer, she's just extremely obstructive. Again, I feel for her own financial gain. And I'm wondering if there's any way that I can kind of get this moving along and save a little bit of money.
Okay, let's see what Alan has to say. Without knowing all the circumstances,
Without knowing all of the circumstances and without knowing any of the underlying facts, I can say this. If your divorce action and your date of separation precedes December 31, 2016, you're bound by the two-year separation period, which in practical terms means that you may not be able to move for the appointment of the master in divorce prior to 2 years. Although I will say in Northampton County, that's never been the case. You can move early in Northampton County. And in Lehigh County, the divorce master attempts to be as flexible as possible and prefers to bring the parties in as early as he can in order to try and begin at least discussing settlement. You mentioned in your question specifically feeling frustrated because you could not gain access to financial documents that your husband controls. I can tell you, regardless of the facts of your case, that Pennsylvania law is quite clear with respect to what you can do in the context of a divorce action, and you or your attorney have the right to conduct discovery. Now, yes, I mean, can individuals attempt to frustrate that process by hiding or refusing to answer honestly? They can. It's a whole nother conversation, and we could spend hours talking about the role of a forensic accountant, but certainly, if the assets in question justify the expenditure of the funds, that is a possibility. Hire a forensic accountant, have him or her start to go through the bank statements that you can obtain via subpoena, the tax returns that you can obtain, and begin to start digging, and then go to court to get court orders demanding that additional information be turned over based on what the forensic accountant says that you need to review. And the courts will issue those orders in the course of divorce litigation. Stalling in divorces is unfortunately part and parcel of litigation, which is why, again, when I was talking earlier about mediation, if you can get both people to agree, you can save a lot of time and money.
Okay. Yes. Okay, Linda. Good luck with that.
Thank you.
Okay. Have a good night. Thanks for calling. I can imagine it gets contentious. Now, her attorney would probably request those documents on her behalf, though.
Yes, and I'm sure. But you know, and I, again, you know, underneath Linda's question lies 1,000 cases that I've experienced and that every other lawyer in practice of family law litigation has dealt with, and that is the sometimes frustrating, slow process that, you know, is discovery. You ask for things. You sometimes don't get everything you want. It's not always the fault of the other lawyer. It's sometimes the fault of their client, you know, dragging his or her feet. I think most lawyers operate in good faith. But, you know, you ask for things. You don't always get them. Then when you get what you get, you sometimes realize that it's not what you need. And then if it's a high asset case and you have a forensic accountant or a financial planner looking at things, they will tell you, hey, Alan, you know, you asked for this, this, and this, and you got X, Y, and Z, but not only did you not get this, you didn't ask for that. And you know, so sometimes consulting with a financial planner or an accountant up front is a great way to figure out what you need before you begin asking those questions in discovery. It gets frustrating and expensive.
Well, thanks. Thanks for the call. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We can take calls live on air or off air. Just give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down, bring it into the studio. Again, that's 610-758-8810. We're at the halfway point, and we have with us attorney Alan Tuller from Gross McGinley. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
This is WDIY. The time is now 6:30, and your current temperature right now is 59. For your Thursday forecast, a chance of showers mainly between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m., partly sunny with a high near 57. Thursday night, patchy frost after 5 a.m., and otherwise mostly clear with a low around 35. Friday, high near 62. Friday night, mostly clear with a low around 45. And Saturday, mostly sunny with a high near 79. Now, coming up, back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shandi. And I have in the studio with me this evening attorney Alan Tuller of Gross McGinley. And we are talking about some hot topics in domestic law. We just went over Act 102, how the separation period has been reduced from 2 years down to 1 year, talking about the differences between mediation and litigation. And we were ending before the call talking about that even though you go to mediation and have a mediator, each party may still engage counsel to help review. So it doesn't mean you're just sitting out there, you know, hanging to dry. You can still get counsel.
Correct. You know, the actual role that the mediator plays in the process, I think, varies based on the individuals. Some mediators are what I would say I would call more proactive than others in terms of perhaps addressing exactly the scenario you described for your audience before we went to break. You know, what happens if one spouse is more forceful than the other and perhaps is advocating and even strong-arming in some sense the other spouse into agreeing to something that you know is not fair. It's tough because, you know, the first instance, as I was trained as a mediator, is you're not supposed to substitute your judgment for the parties. You're not supposed to direct them to an outcome that you think is fair. What is mediation? It's the process of the parties owning the process and the outcome. It's not a decision that's being imposed upon them by a judge or a court. It's two people coming together and discussing and negotiating a resolution to their divorce, custody, support dispute. And it can be tough when you're sitting there and you know in your heart of hearts that maybe the more sophisticated spouse, or you recognize the dynamic that perhaps led to the breakup of the marriage in the first place, which is that one person is a control freak and the other one is a little bit submissive, and you just see it going wrong. I think that a good mediator can and perhaps should, if they see that dynamic beginning to spin out of control, find a way to terminate the mediation. I mean, a mediation is supposed to be two people working on an even playing field, and if one person is just literally getting pounded out there and you know that it's not fair, I think you can find a way to shut it down. Obviously, if there are independent lawyers involved, it makes the process so much easier because you know that whatever the outcome is, if I'm charged as the mediator with drawing up the ultimate agreement, their lawyer is going to review it. And if their lawyer sees what you've already recognized as being unfair, if they're doing their job, they're flagging it, not you.
Mm-hmm.
My job as a mediator is to listen to the two of you, encourage, are you listening to him? Are you listening to her? You know, did you hear what she said? Did you hear what he said? What do you think about that? It sounds corny, and it's an awkward process, especially for lawyers who are not inclined to care what the other person thinks, except to the extent that we can find a way to discredit it on cross-examination. It's a really different role. But you know, back to that sort of Act 102 in mediation versus litigation, you know, the longer divorces stretch out, the more uncertainty there is. I don't know what's going to happen, especially if you have kids, you know. And uncertainty breeds instability, and again, the costs and expenses increase. So hopefully, I mean, we don't know yet. We're less than a year out from the effective date of Act 102, but hopefully the effect of 102 is that divorces will wrap up sooner. More people will be encouraged to resolve their cases, knowing that they have to make decisions sooner rather than later, and perhaps they will be able to do so with, you know, less cost and less turmoil.
Well, let's go to you hinted there for a second about the longer the process, the more instability, and if there's children involved, that leads to instability for them as well. As part of the mediation process, does that include the child support issues or custody issues through mediation as well, or is that a completely different
It includes anything and everything that people come to the mediator wanting to mediate. I mean, okay. We'll talk about pets in a minute, but sure, if you want to come and talk about who gets Fluffy, you know, we'll talk about that. I mean, unlike the court, the mediators are not pre-screening what's appropriate and inappropriate. We, you know, courts will decide whether or not the nature of the dispute is one that the court has jurisdiction over, has the authority to decide, is interested in. Mediators are not doing that. Mediators are there to hear you talk about what's important to you and to help you resolve it. So, yeah, custody's a big issue. I mean, it's the black hole of family law litigation. More money is poured into custody because, you know, divorces, whether it's a year or 2 years or 3 years, a divorce is going to end. At some point, you know, people run out of money, the court gets involved, there's an outcome. You know, if you've got young children, you're going until that kid is 18 years old under Pennsylvania law. You know, for custody purposes, the court has jurisdiction until that child is 18. For support purposes, the court has jurisdiction until the child is 18 or graduates from high school, whichever is sooner. Or later, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, knowing, I mean, I can't speak to your audience. I can speak to me. I'm the master of procrastination, you know. you know, if I know I've got 2 years, you know, okay, I've got other things to do tomorrow.
Right.
If I've got a year, all of a sudden, you know, things in the rearview mirror are closer than they appear, you know, I got to start thinking about it. And that's what I think the architects of this change hope to achieve, is that people will begin to put their affairs in order sooner rather than later. And not to mention that, you know, there's something paternalistic about the entire idea of making people wait any period of time. Like the legislature in its infinite wisdom knows what's best for you, and, you know,
mm-hmm.
give it time and maybe you guys will work out your differences. And, you know, I think that's a holdover from the good old days when, you know, people got to decide whether or not you wanted to leave your husband, frankly.
Right.
So, you know, 1 year is better than two.
Mm-hmm. Good. Let's talk about, I want to get to pet custody, but I think the custody of the children are important. And since we just kind of were talking about that as part of this mediation process as well, let's talk about custody relocation.
All right.
How does that fit in?
It's an unbelievably contentious area of custody law, and you can imagine. So people split up, and sometimes when people split up, one of the things they want to do is get as far away from the other person as they possibly can. And sometimes they need to get as far away from the other person as they possibly can. Maybe they got married in Pennsylvania, but they met in Louisiana and all their families back home in Louisiana. And the marriage falls apart after a few years here and they've got nothing. There's no safety net. Maybe they don't have a job. Maybe they had a job and they lost their job. So people relocate or want to relocate for all kinds of reasons, from the trivial to the incredibly important. But if you have children and you reside in Pennsylvania, you should assume just going forward that if you split from your significant other, spouse, parent of your child or children, that a Pennsylvania court's going to have jurisdiction over your kids. And ultimately, a Pennsylvania court is going to have the say-so over whether or not you get to move, unless the parent of the other child or children agrees. If they agree in writing, you're good to go. But if you decide that you need to move back to Louisiana because that's where your family is, or you need to move back to Louisiana because you got a job offer back there, and the parent of your the other parent of your child or children will not agree, you're going to have to ask the court for permission, and that's going to be done in through what's called a petition for relocation, which may be in conjunction with an initial custody complaint if there never was a custody order, or a petition to modify an existing custody order. And so it used to be the case that there were basically three factors, what we lawyers call the Gruber analysis, which is the Gruber is a name of an important Pennsylvania case, deciding when and under what circumstances a relocation would be permitted by the courts. So in effective January 24, 2011, Pennsylvania institutes a new Child Custody Act, and they changed the rules for relocation. And now there are 10 factors for relocation under the Child Custody Act. And, to simplify, which is always a dangerous thing to do when you're a lawyer, but to simplify, the 10-factor case for relocation is pretty close to the factors for deciding primary physical custody under Pennsylvania law. So you're basically, in almost every instance, you're having a primary custody dispute in the form of a relocation case. And so if you've already got primary physical custody, either via court order or de facto, because that's what you've been doing, it's easier to get a relocation. Why? Because the other parent only has partial physical custody or visitation. And even if I'm moving to Louisiana, maybe the court can cobble together some kind of schedule that gives the other parent something comparable
like
to what
summer
they have.
Or something
exactly.
Like that. Mm-hmm.
If we've got shared physical custody, week on, week off, 4 day, 3 day, 2-2-5, whatever it is, and the other parent wants to relocate to Louisiana, that's going to have a devastating effect on the other parent, because there is no way on earth that you can recreate anything close to that schedule between Pennsylvania and Louisiana. As you said, you're going to have summers and maybe extended Christmas break, spring break, that kind of thing. Those relocation cases are hard to win, and they are, in my opinion, harder to win ever since the 2011 Child Custody Act went into effect, because the courts are required to consider more than they were initially.
Go ahead.
And so I was going to say, the one question that I do get frequently, and that hopefully maybe preempt a couple of questions that will come in, is what's a relocation? Does that mean that, it's only if I move to Louisiana, Alan? Or, no. A relocation is any move that substantially impacts the custodial rights of the non-custodial parent. It could, in theory, be a move from Lehigh County to Northampton County. I mean, in theory, mm-hmm. if you lived in a far, far corner of Northampton County or were moving to a far, far corner of Northampton County, and the driving distance was now such that shared physical custody arrangement isn't going to work anymore, that could be a relocation. On the other hand, you could be moving from Phillipsburg to Easton to Phillipsburg, and it might not be a relocation because maybe you've only got every other weekend and a dinner visit, and you're adding 5 miles to your commute, and it's not going to affect it anyway. So what constitutes a relocation is something that is fact-specific, and if you have any doubts, you should consult an attorney, because if you move thinking it's not a relocation and I don't need permission, and the court, after the other party goes and files some petition or complaint, the court has the ability to force you to bring that child back. New lease, new home, new job, new school, notwithstanding, bring that kid back here. You didn't ask permission.
So no assumptions.
Yes.
I'm going to have another question for you when we come back. Folks, we still have time. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We can take live calls or off air if you're not comfortable talking live on air, 610-758-8810. I'm talking to attorney Alan Tuller of Gross McGinley, and we'll be back in just a moment.
In 2017, WDIY is celebrating 22 years on the air. If you listen to WDIY, support the station by becoming a member today. Members are our most reliable source of support. We couldn't be here without you. To become a member, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100. WDIY, serving the Lehigh Valley and beyond.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I have in the studio with me this evening attorney Alan Tuller of Gross McGinley, and we are talking about hot topics in domestic law. We've talked about Act 102, mediation versus litigation, and relocation in child custody. I want to finish up a couple questions I had on that, and then we're going to talk about pet custody, because I know those pet lovers have sometimes more passion than parents have of their own children. So, Alan, what I wanted to talk about when we were saying that in divorce in Pennsylvania, when there's children and there's custody, Pennsylvania has jurisdiction over custodial rights and what for. You had mentioned if one parent would like to move out of the area, they would have to get permission. Not to make assumptions. Don't assume moving just across the state line from Easton to New Jersey is, you know, not considered a relocation. No assumptions. Always check first. But you had said that you may get permission. So maybe I say, hey, I want to move to New Jersey from Pennsylvania. We get the approval. Now my kids are New Jersey residents. And now I decide I want to go to Louisiana. Can you just briefly kind of tell me what I might have just done there? Can I just go ahead and move because they've given me permission once already to move?
Well,
is it carte blanche?
No, it's certainly not carte blanche. I mean, so you either receive permission to relocate to New Jersey from Pennsylvania via agreement from your ex, and that agreement is filed with the court, or you get permission from the court after a hearing in the form of a court order, and you can move to New Jersey. Now, at this point, the question is, you know, who has the case? Does the case remain in Pennsylvania or does it move to New Jersey? The general rule of thumb is it will stay in Pennsylvania until the Pennsylvania court relinquishes jurisdiction, and the Pennsylvania court has to make that decision itself. It can't be stripped of jurisdiction. It essentially has to agree to relinquish it. And it can sometimes do that, you know, essentially by having a conversation with the court in the other jurisdiction through the filings of petitions by the parties and making a decision about which court is the more appropriate place. But the bottom line is, once you're in New Jersey, if you want to move from New Jersey to Louisiana, I can't speak to New Jersey law. I don't know what New Jersey law says you can and can't do with respect to relocation. If the Pennsylvania court still has jurisdiction over that case, you're going to have to ask the Pennsylvania court, okay, now 2 years later, I want to move to Louisiana. Sometimes the fact that you moved to Pennsylvania might make that move to Louisiana easier because perhaps you've already created some distance between you and your spouse and, hey, what's a little bit more distance? On the other hand, it might be the case that the court looks at you and says, hey, that's exactly what you're trying to do here. You're taking little bites at the apple and we know what you're up to and we don't like it. Again, if I had to say one thing and one thing only, and that is, it is this. Courts don't like relocation cases. They hate them. And they hate them for the simple reason that they know that there's always a winner and a loser. One parent is going to lose. If it's a real relocation case, that means one parent's custodial rights are going to be impacted. So they are going to look hard and close at the relocating parent's reasons for the relocation. Are they legitimate? You know, is it I need the job? Is it I have no safety net? Or is it, you know what, I want to get as far away from the other parent as possible, and by extension, get my kids as far away from that other parent as possible. If the court thinks that's what's going on, you're not getting your relocation.
You know, I did a show on, you know, you don't know what you don't know. I think like last week it might have been. I'm just sitting here so fascinated listening to you, Alan, because there is so much information that people need to understand and know so that they're making the right decisions. Folks, we have a call who's off air. Steve from Allentown called, and Steve had a question, and he said regarding grandparent rights. If one parent refuses to allow grandparents visitation.
You know, I nearly thought about including this in my four hot topics, and I gave it to pet custody instead, only because of a couple of interesting conversations I had. Under Pennsylvania law, grandparents and great-grandparents have special rights that other third parties do not have with respect to seeking custody or visitation rights. There's a whole statute devoted to it. Essentially, you know, to boil it down to sort of a sound bite, if one parent is refusing to allow grandparents visitation, those grandparents do have standing, a legal term meaning the right to go into court and to ask a court to give them some kind of visitation of partial physical custody. That doesn't mean they'll get it. It just means they have the right to go in and ask for it. In deciding whether or not to give it to them, the court's going to look at a whole bunch of things. Best interest of the child or children, number one. They're going to want to know, okay, where's the parent whose parents are coming into court mm-hmm. in this process? Do they have custodial rights of their own? If they do, why are they not allowing their parents to see the children? If that parent is deceased, incarcerated, otherwise unavailable, it's far more likely that the grandparents are going to have a shot at getting some independent standalone custody order to see their grandchildren. So,
do they look at prior history if you had time with your grandchildren before?
Well, I think that folds into the general penumbra of best interest of the children. You know, what's the relationship of the grandparents with the other parent? Is there a concern that those grandparents are going to try and poison the child's mind or children's mind against the other parent? You know, who's being reasonable? Who are the grown-ups? The courts are going to ask all of those questions. You know, they understand. Look, if grandparents are coming into a case asking for visitation, the courts understand immediately that there's some kind of conflict here. What's going on? This is not a happy family.
Okay. Steve, thanks for your call. We have a caller on line one. We have Chris from Nazareth. Hi, can we help you?
Hello?
Hi, Chris. How can we help you?
Yes, I just wanted to find out. As far as my case, domestic relations was continued past the age of 18 and was due to disability. And domestic relations said it would be continued indefinitely. And I spoke to several lawyers, and it basically says it takes a lot of money to go up against domestic relations, and I don't have that. So I wasn't sure what to do, and if there's an agency I could contact that could provide me with some lawyers to assist me.
I mean, you can attempt to contact legal services. I mean, what domestic relations is telling you is that they have made a determination based on some information given to them, whether it's accurate or not, I certainly couldn't say, but they've made a determination that a child past the age of 18 and or graduation from high school is not self-supporting, and a child that is not self-supporting cannot be emancipated under Pennsylvania law, and that's the exception to the rule that a parent's child support obligation ends. So when you are presented with that, I mean, again, and I get it, this is where the whole this is what this costs money thing comes into play. You know, you have to challenge the determination this child is not self-supporting, and if the allegation is that there's a disability, you may need medical testimony. What's the nature of the disability? Why is it that this child, you know, is not capable of holding down a job and living on his or her own? That's really the test, what it comes down to. So, I mean, it's patronizing to say that simply because someone has a disability that they can't be self-supporting. The world is full of people with disabilities who are, you know, self-supporting and contributing. So it's a fact-specific thing. The problem with legal services is they don't have the resources to really take on those kinds of cases, because you probably need medical testimony, vocational experts who are going to be able to look at this particular individual and render an opinion in court and say he, she can or cannot work, can't hold a job, can't live on their own, etc. And Chris, I know that that's really all vague and not very specific, but it's probably the best I can do under the circumstances.
It might be a place to start, Chris.
Okay. And just the question of indefinitely, that's another one. How long is indefinitely considered with domestic relations in the state of Pennsylvania?
Forever.
Is it to the age? Is it not the age of 21, or
nope.
Like you just said, forever?
Forever.
So I could be the age of 90 and still supporting my daughter.
Yep. If your daughter still is incapable of supporting herself, and the choice is between you and public welfare, the state's going to look to you every time.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your help.
Good luck, Chris.
Bye-bye.
We have a couple minutes yet, Alan. Can you get some pet custody in there?
I'm going to give you my two-minute spiel
okay.
on pet custody, because this is an arrow in the heart of all pet lovers out there. I am one. I have two dogs. Every lawyer has their pet custody story. You cannot have been a lawyer for longer than 36 hours in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania without having some pet custody dispute that comes up. And the thing that we have to tell clients that they hate is, hey, your cat, dog, goldfish, ferret is a toaster oven in the eyes of the law. It's chattel, legal term for property. And Pennsylvania law says that in the case of a divorce, property has to be divided between the spouses. And they don't do custody schedules with toaster ovens. They award the toaster oven to someone. They're going to award your dog or your cat. Possession is 9/10 of the law. If you're separating, take the dog or cat. I'm just telling you, because don't expect to get it later on. You're not going to. The cat or dog will have gone missing and will be on a farm in Maine and you'll never find it again. So, Alaska most recently became, I think, the first state to change its laws with respect to pets and divorces, and now has adopted a law which kind of approaches it from almost a custody point of view. New Jersey is contemplating similar legislation, and for those of you in the audience who really are concerned about this, there is a Pennsylvania bill. It is House Bill number 1652. It was introduced in July of this summer, 2017. It is currently jammed up in the Judiciary Committee where it's sitting. I checked this morning. There's been no action taken on it. It was introduced by State Representative Kulik from Allegheny County, and it wants to introduce a more custody-based approach to how courts should deal with pets and divorces. And if you want courts to begin thinking about the welfare of animals and whether awarding a dog to husband or wife in a divorce, whether one is better than the other, call your state rep, because as it stands right now, if you come and you hire me in a divorce and you want a custody schedule for Fluffy, you're not getting one. Even if you and your spouse agree on a custody schedule and you write up an agreement and we file it with the court and then you end up in a fight a year down the road over who gets Fluffy for Thanksgiving, the court will not enforce your agreement. It's non-enforceable. And that's the tragedy for pets and pet owners in Pennsylvania currently.
In 30 seconds, if it's considered property, could you set up a trust and buy your pet through a trust and have it property of the trust?
Well, you're not going to get the court to impose that kind of an order. If you invoke the court's jurisdiction with respect to a property dispute, the court's going to divide that property the same way it divides everything else. My experience has been that if one spouse took the dog, that spouse is keeping the dog.
Okay. Well, yeah, possession then. Yeah. Alan, how do people reach you?
Through our general office number at Gross McGinley, 610-820-5450, or I can be reached directly via email, which is my first initial A, my last name Tuller, T-U-L-L-A-R, at, in the full name of the firm, Gross, G-R-O-S-S, McGinley, M-C-G-I-N-L-E-Y.com.
Oh, McGinley doesn't have an E in it. M-C-G-I-N-L-Y, you said.
M-C-G-I-N-L-E-Y.
L-E-Y. L-E-Y. Yes. Okay. Yes. Sorry, I thought I missed the E there for a second.
I hope I did.
Okay. So phone number 610-820-5450 or your email.
Correct.
Alan, it's been fascinating. It's a great show. Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. Thank you, listeners, as well. Thank you, Lori C., for taking the questions and Shondi for running the board tonight. You're welcome back anytime, Alan. Folks, next week I will talk about year-end tax planning. We're going to give you a little time on that. That's why we're starting in November. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller within the tradition folk music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.